Let's talk about a few threads that didn't make the top tier on points, but are substantive in ways that reward attention. The Road to Lisp piece is a philosophical defense of Lisp family languages that got 247 points and sparked 189 comments. The author's argument is essentially that Lisp's code as data property, the thing called homoiconicity, makes it uniquely suited to a certain kind of exploratory programming where you're extending the language itself as you build.
The HN comments on Lisp threads are reliably interesting because they draw from an older, more academically grounded part of the community. You get people who've been programming since the ARPANET era explaining how Lisp influenced every subsequent language, and you get younger developers who came to it fresh and found it changed how they think about programming, even if they don't use it daily. The debate in the thread is less about Lisp being better or worse, and more about what programming languages are for, as tools for getting things done, or as frameworks for thinking.
The in Emacs, Everything Looks Like a Service piece connects to that same philosophical thread. Emacs is famously extensible to the point of being a computing environment rather than just a text editor. And the piece argues that its design philosophy, everything as interactive, composable functions, predates and arguably prefigures service-oriented architecture. With only 6 comments, it's a small thread, but it surfaced a thoughtful HN response about what we can learn from 50-year-old software design decisions.
The No Leap Second at end of December 2026 announcement from the International Earth Rotation and Reference Systems Service deserves a mention. 290 points and 225 comments for what sounds like bureaucratic timekeeping. But the HN community cares about leap seconds because they've historically caused distributed systems failures. When a leap second is inserted, systems that aren't properly coordinated can experience clock skew, race conditions, and in some cases, outright failures. Google famously invented the leap smear, spreading the extra second across hours rather than inserting it as a discrete event, as a workaround. The relief in the HN comments is genuine.
The girls just want to have fast MPMC queues with bounded waiting piece, great title, is a technical deep dive into multi-producer, multi-consumer queue design, specifically addressing the bounded waiting problem. In concurrent programming, you often need data structures where multiple threads are both adding and removing elements simultaneously, and the challenge is guaranteeing that no thread waits indefinitely. The piece proposes an approach, and the 34 HN comments are a precise engineering discussion, exactly the kind of thing that's hard to find anywhere other than papers or specialized communities.
The common prefix skipping adaptive sort piece fits in that same bucket, an algorithm optimization for sorting that takes advantage of common prefix structure in the data to skip comparisons. Small HN thread, but technically meaty, and the kind of optimization that matters at scale.
The AI tutor for 5-year-olds project from Ello is thought-provoking from an education technology perspective. The engineering challenge they're solving is latency, getting AI response times under 1 second to maintain the conversational rhythm that keeps young children engaged. The blog post is honest about the trade-offs. Lower latency responses require smaller models with less capability, and they describe the architecture decisions around balancing those constraints. The HN comments are split between educators skeptical of AI in early childhood and developers impressed by the system's engineering.
And the parental device use study on adolescent attachment bonds is worth a quick mention. The research published in Frontiers in Psychology looks at whether caregiver device use, parents distracted by their phones, affects the quality of attachment bonds with adolescents. It's the kind of research that HN discusses with more nuance than it typically gets in general media, with commenters identifying methodological questions about correlation versus causation and whether effect sizes are practically significant.
All right, Marcus mentioned our What If We're Wrong segment, and I want to apply it to the thesis that is most confidently asserted across today's feed, the Rust rewrite thesis. Across multiple stories, PGRUST passing its full test suite, the ghosty interview discussing Zig versus Rust, the broader systems programming conversation, there's a deeply embedded assumption that memory safety through type systems is the right direction for system software. Let me put that assumption under pressure.
Make the case.
The confident claim is, C code bases have memory safety vulnerabilities. Rust eliminates those vulnerabilities through its ownership model. Therefore, rewriting C software in Rust produces safer software with comparable or better performance. That reasoning chain has real support. The Android security team published data showing that as their proportion of Rust code increased, memory safety vulnerabilities decreased proportionally. The evidence base is real. But here's what could be wrong. First, the Rust ownership model imposes a specific cognitive model on developers. You must structure your programs around lifetimes and borrowing in ways that don't always map naturally to the problem domain. When developers fight the borrow checker, they sometimes introduce bugs in the logic layer that are harder to find than the memory bugs they avoided. A subtle off-by-one error or an incorrect state transition is, in many real-world contexts, just as dangerous as a buffer overflow.
So the argument is that you've moved risk rather than eliminated it.
Partially, yes. Second concern, Rust's safety guarantees are strong within Rust code, but most serious Rust projects, including system software, use unsafe blocks for performance-critical sections or for interfacing with C libraries. The PGRUS project passes 100% of Postgres regression tests, which is impressive, but Postgres's C code interfaces with platform-specific functionality in ways that Rust will likely need unsafe blocks to replicate. The safety story gets more complicated when unsafe is in the mix. Third, and this is the one I find most intellectually interesting, the Rust rewrite assumes that memory safety vulnerabilities are the dominant attack surface. But if you look at the last several years of serious database and infrastructure breaches, a significant proportion were logic vulnerabilities, configuration errors, and authentication bypasses, not memory corruption. Rewriting in Rust doesn't touch those.
So what signal should we watch for that would confirm the skeptical view?
If PGRUST ships to production and the vulnerability profile doesn't improve as much as the theory predicts, if we see logic bugs and configuration vulnerabilities at similar rates to the C codebase, that would suggest the memory safety frame is capturing less of the real risk than proponents claim. And if the performance benchmarks show meaningful regression in write-heavy workloads, where Postgres's hand-tuned CPath shines, that would challenge the thesis that safety and performance aren't in serious tension.